Hello, this is Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today has been a reporter and a reviewer and is now recognised as one of Brazil's rising literary talents. He was one of Granta's Best of Young Brazilian Novelists in 2012. He's won or been nominated for a clutch of important prizes, and his work has been translated into more than 10 languages. Born of Argentinian stock, his latest book, Resistance, is an examination of family and identity, of belonging, and the different forms that exile can take. Julian Fuchs, welcome to Meet the Writers. Now, exile is obviously a big theme in your book, and that's not surprising looking at your own history. I wonder if you could start by telling us about your family background.
I could say that I come from two generations of political exiles. My grandparents left Romania in the 30s, fleeing the anti-Semitism that was growing there, and went to Argentina, where my parents met later. They had to flee to São Paulo because of the Argentinian dictatorship. So actually exile comes, it's everywhere in the history of our family. And in my own experience, I tend to think of it as part of my childhood, and being born in Brazil during my father and mother's exile, I always wondered if exile is something that you inherit, and that it's something more uncertain than people tend to feel or believe. It's something more unstable. It's not very rigid experience that repeats itself from one place to the other or from one person to the other. For myself, I felt my particular exile was when my parents went back to Argentina and tried to recover the country where they should be living then. And I spent 2 years there, and maybe forced by them, as anything that happens when you are 6 years old. So in a way, intimately, I felt that as my exile. And when I went back to Brazil, I recovered my own country. So it's something that I realized it's quite unstable and quite more complex than normally we see.
Tell me about your parents then and the political situation in Argentina and why they in particular were forced to flee.
The Argentinian dictatorship was one of the most brutal, and they persecuted many people, not necessarily if they had very strong and direct militancy.
You call it the Holocaust actually in your book, don't you? The Hidden Holocaust.
Yeah, in a way, the idea of the Argentinian dictatorship was what we had as an Holocaust at home. A second Holocaust, obviously, because, well, a great part of my family died in the German camps later. Earlier. But I think we always saw that as a obvious human tragedy and something that we had to elaborate as a trauma, as a historic trauma for many people that lived inside our homes.
And of course, Brazil itself has had its own problems.
Yes, they went to another dictatorship, but at that point it wasn't that harsh. It was 77, maybe 8 or 9 years after the worst moment in Brazilian dictatorship. So they came. To a place that was starting to relive some freedom, and they were actually very welcome. That's another thing, that experience that is different from what people normally describe as exile. When they got to Brazil, it was more like a sunny exile after the coldness of the Argentinian dictatorship. It was more joyful than they thought it would be, and they were well received in many senses. There was already a network for receiving exiles from Argentina or from Chile. So it worked well for them. And after a while, my sister was born, and then they were officially established in Brazil, and they could stay longer.
So with this really complicated backstory, I wonder where it is that you feel you belong. And I mean, I know that your book Resistance basically is an entire book about that discovery process. But would you say you're a Brazilian?
Well, normally I say I'm 100% Brazilian and 50% Argentinian. But this is just a joke. I feel more at home in Brazil, definitely. But I know that throughout my life, I always had the need to go to Argentina every now and then and to spend time there and to try to see it with different eyes every time and to see how much I belong to that place. There's always some sort of arbitrariness in the place you consider to be your origin because, well, I come from one generation of Argentinians. My grandparents weren't Argentinian, so I could go to Romania and try to find my origins there, but I don't do that. I go to Argentina, I think I relate to the Argentinian history, I try to read Argentinian authors, so it's something that I don't know exactly where it comes from, but it's there. And after a while, I've been writing a lot about Argentina. And at this point, I think maybe I should look more directly to my Brazilian roots.
Mm. And I mean, a lot of that, I mean, you talk about photographs, for instance, in the book and how photographs actually really lie.
Yeah, that's true. When you try to rebuild the past, what you have is your own memories and the memories of people around you and also a small amount of documents that at first you look at as if they were objective. But then you get to a photograph, for example, and see that it's there for a reason. Somebody decided that was a moment to record for the future. Somebody had a look, a certain look, a certain angle. And also you have your own look, your particular way of looking to the picture and inferring a certain amount of meanings. And when you try to put that in words, words distort what you're seeing. So it's not objective at all. It's always a subjective object.
Mm. Now, the book is called Resistance, and you write in it, resist. How much of resisting is the fearless acceptance of misfortune, compromising with everyday destruction, tolerating the ruin of those close to you? You talk a lot about what resistance really means.
I think what interested me more in this word was its great ambiguity. We consider resisting two very different things. Resisting can be not being able to face something, not being able to say something, or to have any course of action. And in this sense, we have in the book a brother that is not able to deliver himself in family, to be comfortable in a dining table, to deliver fully to that conviviality. And also a narrator that is resisting telling this story because it's too intimate, too personal, and maybe in many ethical senses shouldn't be addressed. But you also have this other way of looking to resistance is resisting as an act of force, as an act of political action with a very positive aspect. So my idea, my utopical idea was that perhaps literature could be the bridge between these two types of resistance, going through from this very negative way of looking to resistance and to a very positive way.
The book centres around, as you say, a brother who is in fact adopted in the book. How autobiographical is this? Do you have an adopted brother?
Yes, I have an adopted brother. The book is very autobiographical in all these aspects. All the history of the family was mainly like that. When I started writing, I felt a strong need to be faithful to facts, to family facts. And the fiction plays a part on it, but only for making it more expressive and changing the circumstances of my life other than the circumstances of the past. The past I try to grasp as precisely as I can.
Mm. And talking about that resistance, the resistance of the author to tell the story, the narrator, I mean, you sort of break that fourth wall a lot of the time. You talk to us, the readers, directly saying, I just can't do this, and maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah, that's the thing. When it turned into a necessity while writing it, because there's a brother, there's a real brother, and I start talking about my brother and the book, and I see he becomes something else. So every time I say my brother in the book, he's more distant from the book.
And he's never named, is he?
Yeah. Yes, he's never named, as the parents are not named, and the sister either. So the main characters are not named. They are my brother, my sister, my father, and my mother. And every time I say that, they gain more body inside the work, but they are more detached from who they really are in life. So the only way I had to deal with this was to talk about it during the book.
Mm. You write what I think is one of the most affecting and brutally honest passages about depression that I have ever read. It's the adopted brother talking. He says it's like somebody sticking a needle in your vein that feels like it goes on forever. And you go on to explore those feelings. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, that's a part of the book that, honestly, I should say that I don't understand it thoroughly either, because it's something that my brother actually said to me at a point in our lives after a strong, intense process of therapy, family therapy. He searched this and said, well, you don't know how it is, this needle that enters your vein. And, well, he started explaining through an image, and I just had the possibility of wondering what that meant, but without being able to know precisely what it meant. So it's something that I wanted to put in the book because it was his formulation, his way of stating what he felt, and something that I don't completely explain myself.
Mm, because he goes on to say that he's using this needle analogy. He says, even when you do notice, when you finally see, there's no use trying to pull that needle out because it's a part of your arm now, and there's a fear that it's growing bigger and bigger, that someone else will show up and want to pull out the needle and they'll end up ripping off part of your body. In other words, I suppose, all of that becomes so much a part of you, doesn't it, that you can't let it go. You're afraid to let it go.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to see it. You're helping me understand this passage. Also, I think, in a way, he was referring to the situation with the grandmothers of Plaza de Mayo.
Let's talk about that. Tell us now about the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo.
Well, just to refer the context, my brother was adopted in December of 76 in Argentina. It was an illegal adoption, and the thing becomes some sort of a ghost because we can never be sure that what are his origins and what was the reason why his biological parents gave in to adoption. That's because in that moment in Argentina, there were the kidnapping of babies. The dictatorial regime not only disappeared with 30,000 militants, but they also, when there were pregnant women among these militants, they waited for the baby to be born and then subtracted the baby from the mother and gave to families normally friendly with the regime. So there are at least 500 cases of that. And we don't know exactly what are the circumstances in which these babies were given to adoption. It's something that we realized throughout our lives that would be part of our history. Not that he's the most likely thing is that he's not one of these children, but we can never be thoroughly sure about that. And I think for him it becomes another kind of a ghost that at some point someone could appear and say, no, you're actually my son, you're not your parents' son. Mm. And this is part of the drama that arises there. And he confessed one time at least that it was one of his fears, even though it wouldn't be a bad thing per se. It's just people trying to relate with their grandsons and granddaughters. But in a way for him, it would be difficult to see himself in this situation. And I think that's what he's referring to in saying someone could appear and try to get that needle out of your arm and ripping your arm off.
And of course, the book is a lot about your exploration of that story and trying to kind of sort it out in your own head and also in a physical sense. Towards the end of the book, you write about your parents reading the book and their reaction. I mean, it all gets very meta. Tell me about that.
Well, while I was writing, I knew I was trying to refer to many experiences that I wasn't able to describe perfectly. And what I did was I interviewed my parents, and after a while I would send them pages and they would comment on the pages I wrote. And I didn't want to correct anything because I wasn't writing an autobiography. It wasn't the official story of our family. It was literature. So I didn't need to correct anything. I just wanted to incorporate this process. And I realized while I was writing it that I had to have their voices too about the book. So what I did is write this final or almost final chapter in which they comment on the book and in which also this hybrid between fiction and autobiography turns into something more explicit.
And your brother, what does he think of the book? We don't hear about that in the actual book.
Well, the book ends with this enigma, final enigma. We don't know what he would think about it. I actually still don't know. It's still a mystery. He hasn't read the book. It's been 3 years since the book has been published and he decided not to read it, which could be interpreted as one of the failures of the book, since it was written for him and to him. But also, he has a very positive way of dealing with the existence of the book. He gives the book as a present to many of his friends. He gets really happy when good things happen with the book, when it's translated to other languages, when it won prizes. He gets really enthusiastic with the idea that it might become at some point a movie. He offers himself as an actor to interpret this character, the brother. So it's something that I realized was really positive. He's into the idea of the book. He thinks in the book his story is told. And it's just maybe too intense for him to read it.
What's your relationship like with him?
Well, it's a complex relationship, as is told there, but also a very positive and affectionate one.
You talked about it being translated into other languages, and of course the English translation is by Daniel Hahn, who is such a talented and lovely man. Tell us about that experience for you, because obviously your English is perfectly competent, so you can read the English translation. How similar is it to your original?
Well, he made a clear effort to respect the format of sentences and parts of the rhythm and sound of the sentences. It's something that I worry a lot about. When I write, all the time I'm reading it out loud, I have reasons to have this three-syllable words in that point with an A as the tonic syllable. There's something that I worry about. I don't know exactly why. As if I was writing poetry and not prose, even though it's basically prose. And he's very attentive to that. he has been trying to find the right format of every sentence the way I did. And we exchanged a lot of ideas on that too, not only if the meaning was precise enough, but if the sentence had the right rhythm. I appreciate a lot what he did that.
Mm. I want to stray a little bit wider than your literary work now, although this is very much connected, because you were on the Rolex Mentor and Protégé program with the fabulous Miyakuto. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was really unexpected. I was indicated for this Rolex program, cultural program, and the idea was to spend a year talking with this more experienced and knowledgeable writer. And Miyakoto is incredibly nice guy. He's a very generous guy.
From Mozambique. So there's that whole exile vibe going on there too.
And that too. We realized that we had many things in common, even though we are not similar writers. He writes a very different literature than mine. And that was part of what made this a good experience, a transformative experience, because he was trying to push me to another direction. I've been very much attached to reality in this last book, and he wanted me to try to be more fictional, trying to invent more, to create characters. And it was a challenge for me for a while. Then I decided that I shouldn't do that. I should continue on my path, but it was important for me to consider the possibility of doing something else and then going back to my previous idea. And also, in this process, we realized that even though we didn't have much in common as writers, we did have much in common as people. He was born in Mozambique as a son of Portuguese parents. He was living there with these two different roots, and he engaged politically in the Mozambican history. So it's something that I started to admire a lot in his trajectory.
And in terms of an impact on your work, will you be more fictional in future, do you think?
I think I realized that I need to be less fictional now, but it doesn't mean that I won't be able to invent more in the future. It's just that at this point, I think I have something to say in that way, that for some reason this very literal understanding of sincerity got into my way of writing, and I have to respect that for now. Sincerity is something that for a long time wasn't considered a literary virtue. But if you go back in time, you see that Tolstoy said this is the most important aspect of a writer is sincerity. Of course, he wasn't saying exactly we should be literal with reality. But I feel this is a moment where we can respect more directly this idea and maybe create something hybrid between the novel and other forms of speech. So the novel and autobiography is one of this, but also the novel and philosophy and sociology and even political discourse. This is something that, this is a part of the novel which is trespassing some of its boundaries, and it's interesting what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, you could say you write that new buzzword, autofiction.
Yes, well, the new buzzword normally is something that people criticize because maybe it's fashionable or something like that, or it's a symptom of our narcissistic way of dealing with the world. We can only write about ourselves or something like that. But I think there's something of truth in there too. And it's also a part of the boundaries of the novel that isn't explored to its limit yet. We see that what happened with the novel during the 20th century, the total implosion of the novel in many aspects, left aside the fictional voice. Even in the most disruptive forms of novel, there was always a fictional voice. And this is something that we could maybe distress a little in our current novels.
So now you're based in São Paulo. You are involved with a homeless project.
Yes, I'm writing a new novel. It's called The Occupation. So the occupy and resist idea, which is central to any political action in the present, is going to be embodied by these two different novels. They form almost a diptych, resistance and occupation. And this occupation should be understood in many different ways, but one of them is the unoccupied building of the center of the city of São Paulo, occupied by homeless people. They invited me to do some sort of an artistic residency in this place, which meant get close to them and follow their movement and, in a way, become a militant for them too. I was there for some time and started to think that this was something I should write about. And this is one of the occupations in the new novel, the novel that I'm writing. There are also other ideas of occupation there. For example, the body of a pregnant woman, which is my wife. So autofiction is present here again. And so the occupied body of a woman. And the idea of occupying literature as well, because occupying has become one of the most effective forms of action. And maybe not only public spaces, streets, and buildings must be occupied, but also this more abstract instances as the novel.
Absolutely. Well, Julian, I think that you are a man who is now occupying a really central space in Latin American literature. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
No, thank you.
Resistance by Julian Fuchs is translated into English by Daniel Hahn. It's published by Charco Press. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of George McDonough, Sarah Miles, Martha Libri and Christy Evans. And you can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, MixCloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.